sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is legendary comedian Robert Klein. We'll also have visits from our Two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Purim Sameach. Happy Purim. I had a bit of shock this past week. I heard on the weather report on the news on a 70-degree day that Tucson, Arizona was going to have a blizzard last Wednesday. And I publicly scoffed at the idea. A blizzard in Tucson. Seriously? As my 12-year-old daughter Tzipora would say, I know, right? We live in the Sonoran Desert, not the Alps. We might get a little rain, an occasional bit of frost. Once every 2 or 3 years, a little snow that melts instantly. But a blizzard? No way, Jose. Well, oops. As we say in Judaism, Al Chet Shechatati Lefanecha, for the error I have committed before you. Around noon on Wednesday, we found out what a small blizzard in Tucson would actually look like. Beautiful, in fact. Saguaro cacti covered in snow, a white winter wonderland. It didn't last long, and it might not actually count as a full-on blizzard to people from, New Hampshire, but it sure as heck quickly covered my front and backyards with snow, including all the pool furniture. I was beginning to think we might actually have a white Purim, which Irving Berlin did not write a song about. Anyway, for us, a miraculous turn of weather events appropriate to a season that celebrates miracles like Purim. Beyond the freak blizzard, today is a kind of trifecta of celebrations since it's the fabulously fun Jewish holiday of Purim, and it falls on Tucson's own rodeo weekend, and baseball's spring training is starting this week. And oh, by the way, we have the fantastic comedian Robert Klein as our guest, getting ready for the 10th anniversary celebration of the Two Jewish Radio Show next Saturday night, March 2nd at the Fox Theater, where he'll star in our live broadcast. Get your tickets now. It's all just way too much fun for 1 hour of Sunday morning radio. But I will try my best to get it all in. First, it's rodeo weekend in the heart of the West here in Tucson where I live, so I thought we'd begin with a Western theme. You can't really understand what a big deal rodeo week is here in Tucson unless you live here and have lived here for at least a year or two, or 14 years like me. While sometimes in the Southwest we get a little testy about the stereotypes of desert and cowboys, of cactus and overgrown cow towns that's foisted upon us, occasionally we actually seek out and embrace those stereotypes, and this is one of those times. So how do you say yippee-ki-yay in Yiddish? Yippee-ki-oy-vey? Anyway, Rodeo Week consists of a big parade, the world's largest non-motorized parade, for what it's worth, followed by, I know this will shock you, a rodeo. We let kids out of school for a couple days to go to the parade and wear cowboy boots and hats and generally pretend that we still have a connection to the folks who rode horses and tamed the Wild West. To most people in America, let alone most Jews, the idea that schools are out for 2 days during the week of rodeo, of all things, seems so absurd as to be positively archaic. Do we close for the county fair? How about Decoration Day? And yet, when you live as we do at the heart of the West, not far from Tombstone in what was Apache country not much over a century ago, rodeo is still a pretty big deal. You might not immediately associate Jews and cowboys, but it's worth noting that there were Jews even in the Old West. The legendary O.K. Corral gunslinger and lawman, Wyatt Earp's own common law wife, well, his last one anyway, was a Jewish woman named Josephine Marcus. and the author of a new book on Josephine Marcus, Mrs. Wyatt Earp, will be here on Too Jewish in a couple of weeks, by the way. And there were Jewish mayors and sheriffs and even Jewish outlaws. Of course, those ubiquitous jeans that everybody wears around here were pioneered by a Jewish guy, Levi Strauss, a Jewish immigrant from Bavaria who came to the Gold Country in 1850 and co-invented the denims that sat on all those saddles that blazed through the Wild West. He and his partner, another Jewish tailor named Jacob Davis, who patented the rivets that hold on the pockets, made Levi's the preferred pants of the cowboy set. Clearly a Jewish name. And so, to honor all of those Jewish cowboys, here's a less than perfectly historically accurate musical version of another one of those legendary Jewish characters of the Old West. Long before saddles blazed, there was the Ballad of Irving. This cut was requested by a fan of Too Jewish by the name of Lashaya Silver. So, here we go. Hi-O Silver, the famous Ballad of Irving.
He was short and fat and rode out of the west with a Mogan David on his silver vest. He was mean and nasty right clear through, which was kind of weird because he was yellow too. They called him Irving. Big Irving. Big Short Irving. Big Short Fat Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the west. He came from the old bar mitzvah spread, schlepping a salami and pumpernickel bread. He always followed his mother's wishes. Even on the range, he used two sets of dishes. Irving. Big Fat Irving. Big Sissy Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. A 141 could draw faster than he, but Irving was looking for 143, walking the salt saloon like a man insane, and ordered 3 fingers of 2 cents plain. Irving. Big Fat Irving. Big Sport Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. The James boys was coming on a train at first sun, and the town said, Irving, we need your gun. Well, that train pulled in at the break of dawn. Irving's gun was there, but Irving was gone. Irving. Big Fat Irving. Big Help Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Well, finally, Irving got 3 slugs in the belly. It was right outside the Frontier Deli. He was sitting there twirling his gun around, and Butterfingers Irving gunned himself down. Irving. Big Fat Irving. Big Dum Dum Irving. Big Dum Dum Dead Irving. The 142nd fastest gun in the West. Really?
That was the Ballad of Irving, all about being Jewish in the Wild West. Well, kind of. Nowadays, of course, we Southwestern Jews are much more sophisticated and we hope braver than Irving. But a lot of us still wear Levi's and ride horses for fun, if not for transportation. It is Purim today, of course, Chag Sameach again, the wild, raucous celebration of the Book of Esther's story of the first attempted genocide of the Jews, followed by salvation, redemption, and celebration. Only Jews could make fun out of attempted genocide. Anyway, today we're commanded to really, truly rejoice, to celebrate without reservation, and that means to laugh. Because the Book of Esther is a mix of the comic and the tragic. But it all ends, La'yehudim hayta ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. We Jews enjoyed light, happiness, and complete joy. To help us celebrate Purim, here's a sample of the delightful comedy of Robert Klein, our headline comedian this coming Saturday night at the 10th anniversary celebration of Too Jewish at the Fox Theater Tucson. Get your tickets by calling 547-3040 or 327-4501.
Choosing a musical instrument. Comes a certain time in your life as a child, your father grabs you and said, you must learn a musical instrument. You're 11 years old. You'll have to work your way through college. Choose it. And I went for flash, saxophone. And he said, come here. Take a flute. Don't be a schmuck. It's light. Carry it around, a little thing. You put it in your pocket, you go home. It's light. There were suggestions of accordions. Forget it. I can't take an accordion. I heard the arguments were, oh, it's a hell of an instrument. It's an orchestra in itself. You can take it anywhere. It's mobile. I think an accordion's groovy if you happen to be in a prisoner of war camp. If you don't have access to real instruments. You know, hey, solid for our show, Lieutenant. You know, one of those. But in civilization, there's no excuse for an accordion. Or its vicious little brother, the miniature concertina. It's just so fond you may remember of sea voyages. Yody hoody, shiver me timbers, captain's got the fingers. Big pirate becomes a fruit there with a little rag on his head and Emony written on him. I love organ if they play Bach or something, but roller rink organ turns me right off. That kind of thing they advertise on television lately. Play the organ at home, amaze your friends. Da 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 da. And they play a tune that, of course, everyone whistles all day long, Red River Valley. Da 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 da. Fun for the entire family. Da da. Because you use the colors, blue, orange, purple, green, chartreuse. And if you go to someone else's house, let me play your organ. You sit down, where are the colors? A girl with pigtails with her hands on her chin, you know. Da 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 da. And they have this boy set up to go, hey, Dad, play Red River Valley again. Why, okay, Tad. Da 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 da.
That was the legendary comedian Robert Klein, who'll be here this Saturday night for the 10th anniversary celebration of Too Jewish at the Fox Theater. Come join us. Go to foxtheatertucson.org, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, or call the Fox box office at 547-3040, 520-547-3040. The show will also be broadcast live right here on KVOI starting Saturday night at 8 p.m. When we come back on Too Jewish This Morning, you'll have a chance to meet comedian Robert Klein, the star of our show, Saturday, March 2nd, and a delightful guy. Hear him in person in a few moments on Too Jewish.
There's nothing like a live radio show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Too Jewish Radio Show, presented by the Jim Click Automotive Team at the Fox on March 2nd.
Better than Prairie Home Companion, it's Deli Home Companion. Join me and my great guests, including legendary comedian Robert Klein, for a live radio variety show March 2nd at the Fox to benefit Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and Temple Emmanuel.
Tickets at the Fox box office and foxtucsontheater.org.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, legendary comedian Robert Klein, who has entertained audiences, all around the country, all around the world for 40 years and more. Born in the Bronx, he was a member of the famed Second City Troupe in Chicago, nominated twice for Grammy Awards for Best Comedy Album for his albums Child of the 50s and Mind Over Matter, received a Tony Award nomination for Best Actor, and won a Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle Award for his performance in the Neil Simon musical, They're Playing Our Song. He won an Obie, an Outer Critics Circle Award. He's won a lot of stuff. Robert Klein is the first comedian to appear in a live concert on home box office, has done 9 one-man shows for HBO, and he will be here in Tucson on March 2nd. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You left out the 2 Grammy nominations. All nominations. I never won.
You know,
well, some of the lesser ones.
Yeah, I think it was
in. What's the story with this Too Jewish? What kind of name is that for a show?
Well, you know, people say, oh, Rabbi, you know, I want to be Jewish, but not too Jewish.
It reminds me of early broadcasting, or even more recent broadcasting. There's no doubt in my mind that George, the character on the Seinfeld show, is Jewish in every rhythmic way. And they decided to call him, give him an Italian name, because somebody at NBC said, you know what, everybody's Jewish, make him not Jewish.
There had to be somebody not Jewish in that show. So what kind of a job is comedian for a good Jewish boy?
Well, I would say that we're overrepresented in comedy and psychiatry and dentists, and underrepresented in the priesthood.
Definitely.
I never met a Jewish priest.
Well, you know, a Kohen technically is a priest. I mean, they got the idea from somebody.
Except someone screwed up your name at Ellis Island, as we were discussing. I've never heard a Kohen that wasn't C-O-H-E-N.
We're clearly been misspelling it for years. So I want to ask, you've been nominated for all these awards. You've never won. Was it anti-Semitism?
Probably. No, I actually, you know, the Outer Critics Circle Award and Obie, I did win, but I mean, the big ones, no. But obviously, it was great to be nominated. You know what? My parents were born in New York. My grandparents came from Hungary in 1903, which was a great move, I would say. But they weren't particularly observant. I've talked about it, about the Jewish experience. My father talked as a kind of ghettoized guy, kid from the Upper East Side, which had Jews, which had Irish and Poles and fist fights, and also talked to me about a more anti-Semitic country, you know. And I did experience it in college, in a small college in Western New York. Nothing you could put your finger on. Hey, Jew boy! You know, just...
Yeah, subtle like that, I think.
Subtle.
Yeah.
But I got my revenge in my junior year when 2 important elements of my college education, anti-Semitism and theater, became a confluence when I played Shylock in The Merchant of Venice before an entirely anti-Semitic audience. It was quite something.
Did they love you?
Well, when I asked the question, "Doth not a Jew have eyes? Doth not a Jew have hands, organs, senses, dimensions?" They went, "No! Jew, boy, Jew!" And they started to chant and chase me with German shepherds. At least that was my fantasy. That's how I remember it. And then I knocked on the door of the ethics professor, and he didn't let me in.
Of course. I mean, you know, you were Jewish.
I would say that... Jewish people in this country are in as great a shape as they've ever been, that there'll always be anti-Semitism. It's a mystery to me, but it's one of those things that just simply, like a common cold, cannot be stamped out no matter how much you prove or don't prove and so forth. But it's certainly better, and in this country, I think, people are sort of, there's a mysticism about Israel for born-agains and all that, and I'm suspicious of some of the allies, but...
Hey, listen, we'll take them where we can get them.
The world is not 6,700 years old. I don't want guys running for president standing there and saying, well, we're not sure about Darwin, you know. Come on, they got to wake up. And then they use cell phones. They're like the Taliban. I mean, they use things created by people that think, but, you know, they kind of... go into this. I'm getting heavy here, Robert.
You're getting very serious. We'll have to come back in a few moments with Robert Klein, and we'll see whether it gets heavier or lighter or goes a completely different direction on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations who provide scholarships for kids in kindergarten through 12th grade to go to qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel's Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Join over 750 supporters last year who gave money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income tax. New this year, there's an additional tax credit, the switcher credit. It increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,003 for single filers and $2,006 for married couples filing jointly. When we fight every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to foster a Jewish identity for our community's kids. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive financial aid in order to get a Jewish education. Call 647-8442, again, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Give the gift of education. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Chag Purim Sameach, a happy holiday of Purim today. I must note that in addition to rodeo, there's another great and only slightly Jewish thing happening this week. The beginning of spring training games, best way to see a ball game of all, with the Cactus League throwing out its first pitch, and in celebration of spring, to give us a Jewish leg up on spring training ball for the 2013 season, here's Mandy Patinkin's Yiddish version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Zu der Ballgame, zu eurem Lommir doch gehen. Kauf mir den Nistloch und Cracker Jack, will ich kein Mulf und dort nicht weg. Ich seh gut, mut die Ballspieler, es passt nicht als ein Verspiel. Weil sie seh, zwei, drei Spikes neus bei der Baseballspiel.
Nemt mir oif zu dem ballgame. That was Mandy Patinkin singing Take Me Out to the Ballgame in Yiddish for baseball spring training, one of my personal favorite seasons of the year. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Guy, we were talking last week about the visit of a really wonderful international photographer, Israeli photographer, secular Jew, who gave a fantastic set of photos showing the ultra-Orthodox world in unique ways. We talked last week about the ceremony of the firstborn male donkey, but there's more to it than that. Can you explain a little bit more about it?
Yes. We were talking about Gil Cohen Magen, an amazing photographer who used to be working for Reuters for over 10 years and became a freelance and got this passion of taking photos of the ultra-Orthodox, the most extreme observant ultra-Orthodox parts of Israel. And you know, another example of some of the ceremonies that he was able to capture on camera, he was able to get into Simchat Torah celebration, the festival of the beginning of the reading of the Torah that happens straight after Sukkot at the community called Bet Aaron, There are very strict, observant Jews in Mea Shearim, basically, and I think some
the
of them
the ultra-Orthodox area in Jerusalem, Mea Shearim, of course.
And their ceremony lasts for hours. You know, in most, even Orthodox and some of the ultra-Orthodox celebration of Simchat Torah, people come, they do 7 rounds with the Torah. It takes 30 minutes, 40 minutes, maybe an hour, right? And then it's over. When they're doing the celebration, it's a whole night long celebration. And at one point, the main rabbi, the Admor, comes to the stage on the 7th Hakafa, on the 7th round.
Seventh circle. He comes up to the Bima, right?
And he dances alone. All the students, only male students,
of course,
are standing around. And he dances alone with the Torah, with his own private Torah scroll. And he dances on the stage for 45 minutes. 45 minutes. And Gil took the photo. And, you know, for me as an Israeli, it was funny because you see the photo and you see on the back side of the photo a big sign saying, Asur Letzalem. Photography is forbidden. Don't take photos. So he took the photo. And once they saw him taking the photo, they kicked him out of the room.
Sure. I should note that not only is photography of in the ultra-Orthodox world very questionable, but on the festival itself, it would be forbidden because it would be a form of writing, you know, it caused some problems.
So they kicked him out, and some of the people who were friends with him later on called him to check if he's okay, you know, if he was hurt and stuff. And then about a week later, he gets a phone call from someone from the community who knew him and recognized him and said, Gil, we have a question for you. You took this photo of the rabbi dancing, and don't tell anyone, but the rabbi asked if you can bring him
a copy.
So that's the story, and it shows that even in the most extreme observant communities, there is some openness, and there are changes. There are changes that are happening in the ultra-Orthodox communities that are underground streams and waves and changes. And it's very, very interesting, fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating. And also, of course, they're human beings, just like everybody else, as we all are. Thanks so much, Guy.
Thank you.
We'll talk next week. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the diaspora in Israel, the dialectic between the two over the course of many centuries. Let's go back to the founding of certain institutions that are central to Jewish life, like the synagogue. Might have been created in the diaspora, might have been created in Israel, certainly was created while the Second Temple stood, and yet it's contributed so much to Jewish life.
Well, let's look at the first exile, which followed the destruction of the first temple in 586, because some people never came back from that. And right. So there are these very ancient Jewish communities in places like Iran, Iraq, which weren't called by those names back then, but right. Doesn't matter.
Babylon, Persia.
And Egypt, all of which predate.
Might be Yemen, too, actually. That's right. Considered a great diaspora
right.
community.
So how did Jews in these places devise ways of maintaining and even strengthening their identity, staying current on what the instructions in the 613 commandments were and all their literature that was established before, during, and after the destruction of the first temple? How did they stay connected with that far away from Israel? There was no temple. They couldn't make the pilgrimages. They couldn't do the sacrifices that they were commanded to do, but they maintained an identity. And I think part of the answer is they wrote, they studied, they read, and they evolved community leaders, whether they were called chachamim, wise men, or learned men. They weren't called rabbis yet, but some were scribes because they could read and write. So they wrote new handwritten copies of the same holy scriptures. And there were prophets and poets who did their work in exile. I mean, ultimately, and you can debate whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, but the Musaf service that Orthodox Jews sometimes struggle with because it's very long on holidays, and especially if it's
conservative Jews too,
Shabbat and a holiday, that was devised to replace the sacrifices you were supposed to make on those specific days. So it was literally an addition to compensate for the fact that there was no temple in which you could make those sacrifices.
Right. In addition to all of the prayer services replacing sacrifice, you know, that was unique because it totally replaced it.
Right. And, you know, all the institution of clergy and gathering and public Torah reading and all, these developed over many centuries, but they developed largely when Jews were living outside the land of Israel, sometimes in addition to in the land of Israel, and sometimes instead of. So, you know, rarely was there a period like the period today when Israel was a thriving state and there were very important Jewish communities in the diaspora. But the current situation is not without precedent, because even a couple of centuries before the Common Era, when the Greeks were running the Eastern Mediterranean world, there were already great Jewish communities in places like Alexandria, Egypt, among others, who felt the need to explain and defend themselves. I mean, they did a sort of a Madison Avenue-style advertising campaign, and they published the Septuagint in Greek, which includes books that are now excluded from the Jewish Bible, the Apocrypha, but were included in this edition that was prepared by the Jews in Greek-speaking Alexandria to present and defend their way of life.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, great contributions from diaspora Jews, in part because they were diaspora Jews living outside the land. We will have to continue this next time.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Irwin and Murray celebrate selling their raincoat business by going on safari to Africa. But one night in the jungle, they're frozen in their tracks by an ominous low roar. "Murray," quakes Irwin, "I heard." "Shah, look behind me. Tell me, what do you see? Is it a lion, a tiger, a leopard?" "I should know," moans Murray. "What am I, a furrier?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and know your coats. And now a word of Torah, and a uniquely appropriate one for the weekend of rodeo here in Tucson, Arizona. But first, a little Shakespeare. In the play Julius Caesar, the conspirator Cassius says to his fellow plotter, "The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves." This week, we read the great Torah portion of Ki Tisa, the story of the golden calf. It is one of the most dramatic, and for the rabbis, distressing portions in the whole Torah. The problem is acute. According to the text, our people witnessed the 10 plagues, are personally saved at the shore of the sea by God, and received the direct revelation at Sinai. In short, experience God more directly than any group in history ever has, and then, almost immediately, turn around and reject God and worship a cow made out of their own jewelry. No wonder the rabbis of the Talmud and the Midrash call this week's events the Maaseh HaEgel, the awful story of the calf. How can a people, given such a clear set of signs and wonders, and even direct instruction and command, follow God for just 40 days before pursuing a weak and bovine substitute? The answer, to paraphrase Shakespeare, is not in our God, but in ourselves. We enjoy spectacle, are impressed by it, awed by it. But as soon as it's gone, its effects linger a very short time. What makes us tick as human beings, what keeps us in line, is the very dailiness of regular observances, rules, schedules, of the kinds of laws and rituals that are very much a part of practical Judaism in subsequent periods. We need both ritual and structure, and until these are provided in a coherent way, we tend to flounder, even disastrously so, as we did at the time of the golden calf. The message is, simply, we need more than grand ideas or sweeping spirituality. We need religion and a Jewish grounding in practice and experience, or we won't be able to remain both ethical and coherent. Without that focus, we start to worship golden calves of every kind, from our work to our pastimes to our possessions to our unfortunate obsessions with power and control. The antidote to this tendency to turn to substitutes for goodness is to renew our commitment to holy actions, even small ones. This week, try to incorporate a Jewish practice you have not previously done. A little Torah study or prayer, ritual or tzedakah, charity that you haven't made a regular part of your life previously. Doing so can help you connect to the true God and avoid the danger of worshiping your own golden calves, whether it's rodeo weekend or not. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll talk with our great guest, the outstanding comedian Robert Klein, who'll be here at the Fox Theater for our 10th anniversary of Two Jewish this coming Saturday night. Get to know him better when we return on Two Jewish.
Environmental Strategies Incorporated was established in Arizona almost 15 years ago. They're a corporation that's very unique and has distinguished itself as one of the foremost environmental remediation companies in Arizona. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is also a full-service general contractor. The fact that they have two divisions affords their clients the opportunity to work with one contractor to deal with environmental problems as well as their building and remodeling needs. Environmental Strategies clientele range from single-family homeowners to multi-million-dollar Fortune 500 companies. So, if you're in need of asbestos abatement, mold remediation, or general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies at 884-1114. And, if you wish, ask for Ken Goodman, the president. He'd be more than happy to talk with you about your project. That's Environmental Strategies, 884-1114.
There's nothing like a live radio show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Two Jewish Radio Show, presented by the Jim Click Automotive Team at the Fox on March 2nd.
Better than Prairie Home Companion, it's Deli Home Companion. Join me and my great guests, including legendary comedian Robert Klein, for a live radio variety show March 2nd at the Fox to benefit Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and Temple Emmanuel.
Tickets at the Fox box office and foxtucsontheater.org.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's efforts to form a new government are being complicated by an unlikely alliance between two parties with opposite views on the Palestinians, causing political headaches for the recently re-elected Israeli leader ahead of President Barack Obama's visit to the region next month. The center-left Yesh Atid party supports establishing a Palestinian state. The religious nationalist Jewish Home Party supports annexing to Israel most of the land claimed by Palestinians, but the two parties are finding common cause in their joint demand that Netanyahu commit to eliminating sweeping military draft exemptions for the ultra-Orthodox. Israel's January 22nd election left Netanyahu weakened and without a clear path to form a coalition. Either a narrow one of religious and right-leaning parties, as in his past government, or a broader one that would include centrists and left-leaning parties. Netanyahu's task is made more difficult as two rookie leaders, Yesh Atid's Yair Lapid and Jewish Home's Naftali Bennett, emerged emboldened after very successful campaigns. Together, those parties hold as many Knesset seats, 31, as the coalition of Netanyahu's Likud and Avigdor Lieberman's Yisrael Beitenu. The prime minister says he wants to create a broad coalition that will control two-thirds of the 120-seat Knesset, the parliament, saying Israel needs a consensus government to grapple with foreign and domestic policy challenges. Lapid and other critics say Netanyahu needs to decide on a more narrowly defined policy agenda and form his coalition in that way. Netanyahu would have difficulty forming a majority coalition without enlisting either Lapid's Yesh Atid or Jewish Home. Netanyahu's deadline to form the coalition is just a couple of days before President Obama's scheduled March 20th arrival. With one-third of that time elapsed now, the prime minister has so far failed to cut a deal with any of the parties, and formal negotiations are at a standstill. He's wary of clashing with the ultra-Orthodox parties because they've been loyal allies. Obama is going to come and meet a prime minister who is not king anymore and is significantly weakened, says Gil Hoffman of the Jerusalem Post. There are two princes who did just as well as he did in the election, who have joined forces despite their differences, and now they are each twisting one of Netanyahu's arms. The alliance between Lapid and Bennett reflects how Israel's political agenda has shifted from Arab-Israeli peacemaking to socioeconomic issues and religion in the state, eroding the traditional divide between hawks and doves in Israel and making it tougher on Netanyahu to split the opposition and control the agenda. We'll see how it all shakes out.
Ilu ilu hotziyanu hotziyanu mi mitzrayim velo asabahem shvatim dayenu da dayenu da dayenu da dayenu 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 da dayenu da dayenu da dayenu dayenu dayenu.
If ever there was proof that a once marginal feminist Jewish ritual is now mainstream, this is it. The latest Pottery Barn catalog shows a new Passover Seder plate holding an orange. The modern leaf-themed Passover ritual object has seven compartments. In addition to spaces for the Seder's traditional symbols, you know, maror, bitter, herbs, charoset, all the regular stuff, there's also a leaf to hold an orange, which is featured in the photo in the Pottery Barn catalog. Including an orange on the Seder plate goes back to the early 80s, according to Susanna Heschel, the innovation's creator, the Jewish studies professor at Dartmouth, daughter of the famed Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel, and a past guest of Two Jewish. She told this story right here. Adding an orange came out of her experience when she encountered a student-written feminist Haggadah, which suggested putting a crust of bread, prohibited, of course, during Pesach, the Chametz-free festival, to express solidarity with lesbians and gay men, after a Rebbetzin said there's as much room for a lesbian in Judaism as there is for a crust of bread on the Seder plate. Susanna Heschel decided the following year to put an orange on her family's Seder plate as a gesture of solidarity with Jewish lesbians and gay men and others who are marginalized within the Jewish community. Bread on the Seder plate brings an end to Pesach, renders everything Chametz, she said. That is kind of treif. And it suggests that being lesbian is being transgressive, violating Judaism. I felt an orange was suggestive of something else. The fruitfulness for all Jews when lesbians and gay men contribute and are active members of Jewish life. She noted, here on Too Jewish, that in its telling and retelling, the story was changed into a different one. The typical patriarchal maneuver never occurred, she said. Now the story circulates that a man said to me that a woman belongs on the bima like an orange on the Seder plate. A woman's words are attributed to a man, and the affirmation of lesbians and gay men is erased. Isn't that precisely what's happened over the centuries to women's ideas, Heschel said? Isn't that precisely the erasure of their existence that gay and lesbian Jews continue to endure to this day? I'm all for adapting Jewish rituals to contemporary perspectives. My personal Passover favorite is the Miriam's Cup, which references both a woman's pivotal role in the survival of the Jewish people and God's blessing of water. Perhaps next year we'll see the Pottery Barn feature a Miriam's Cup. That would be a little bit amazing. Actually, having a feminist Seder plate for sale at Pottery Barn? For Jewish feminists and for the LGBT community in general, this is a kind of Dayenu all by itself. An interesting mayoral race is shaping up in my native city of Los Angeles. Jews in L.A. are the fourth most important ethnic bloc in the city after Latino, Asian American, African American voters. They also have a history of forming powerful electoral coalitions with the other minority groups. That means the Jewish vote in L.A. is often key to putting together a winning coalition to become the next mayor of the second largest city in America. This time, the Jewish bloc was supposed to go to Zev Yaroslavsky, a county supervisor and high-profile L.A. politician, and an old friend of my family's, I must add, in the interest of full disclosure, who is highly identified with the Jewish community. Zev Yaroslavsky was considered to have a real shot at the mayoralty if he chose to run, but in the end, he stayed out. That left the Jewish vote wide open. Two candidates with non-traditional Jewish backgrounds currently lead the race in L.A., and both have played up their Jewish credentials. Eric Garcetti, the president of L.A. City Council, is of mixed Jewish and Mexican ancestry. He calls himself the kosher burrito, and he certainly seems like he has a winning formula if he can draw both Latino and Jewish votes just by being himself. His competition appears to be Jan Perry, a member of L.A. City Council and an African-American Jew, who herself automatically unites two other voting blocks, well, two kind of shared voting blocks. Wow, a Latino Jew and an African-American Jew going head-to-head to become the next mayor of L.A. Pretty cool. Even candidates with more tenuous Jewish ties have tried to cash in on the large Jewish population of L.A., 6% of the city generally, but 12% of the electorate since they vote at very high rates. Mayoral candidate Wendy Gruhl, the city controller, is married to a Jewish guy. She announced that she would like to convert to Judaism. I believe in the Jewish tradition and religion, she said. I suppose especially if it helps get votes. It's a bit amazing to me now that being Jewish in some parts of America outside of New York is considered a major political advantage. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. He's legendary comedian Robert Klein, who's been entertaining audiences for four decades. By the way, how does it feel to hear that?
I don't know. You know, I mean, it's nice to be a legend, but what comes with it is age. It's like, you know, is it worth it to be 70 years old and so you can get the early bird special in Fort Lauderdale?
Robert,
I mean, or Phoenix, for that matter.
New York, Phoenix, or Tucson, or anywhere.
I don't know. It's a trade-off. I, you know what? It is nice to have the respect and appreciation from my peers and colleagues, and you know, I think that I've always represented excellence. And if I didn't have the biggest career of all time, I'm quite satisfied with the things I've accomplished. And I think, you know, not to be pretentious, but I think that making people laugh is a high calling, you know?
So,
I mean, rabbis make people laugh.
Sometimes even intentionally.
very good, Rabbi.
Thank you very much.
One,
you can use that.
Mark one for the rabbi.
Yeah, you know, you got to get some of them in.
Really, you know... I'd like to say that most of the, in a kind of counterintuitive twist, most of the actual physical manifestations of laughter are negative. Higher blood pressure, your cheeks hurt, your stomach hurts. But in the aggregate, it seems to be therapeutic that for those that moments that say my show is an hour or more, people forget their disappointments or their problems or their disappointment with their marriage or their children or whatever it may be, the health, and maybe even if there's nothing wrong with them. It's a wonderful, leaves you with a good feeling.
It creates wonderful endorphin rushes, too, they tell me scientifically.
You remember the that interesting editor, I've forgotten his name now, who had a very fatal form of arthritis and claims that he extended his life and cured himself by watching the Marx Brothers.
Yes.
Other comedy... you know, I don't think there's any scientific basis for that. Although my parents would have loved to think, you know, because I was supposed to be a doctor.
Of course. Weren't we all, really?
Well, a few things got in my way. Calculus, physics, botany, organic chemistry, inorganic chemistry, reading, spelling, comprehension, behavior, aptitude, attitude, inclination, and talent.
Other than that, hardly anything.
No, I could have been right there. Most of the people I went to school with went to medical school. There's a couple of judges. So many of them were lunatics when they were in college, and yet turned out to be pretty solid people.
I remember a routine you did long ago about growing up in America in the 50s and the Pledge of Allegiance. And you finish it, I mean, it just builds to a climax, and you finish it with kissing the tzitzis.
Oh, you know what that was? We had a school assembly. I was born and raised in the Bronx, and the school, I would say, was about 80% Jewish, maybe a little less, but only a handful of Jewish teachers, but so there were still prayers in the public school. I sang Protestant hymns, which I think are beautiful. But we did have the flag. The American flag went down the center aisle, and the New York City flag, with its very sincere emblem of the white man cheating the Indian out of the island.
Manhattan Island for $26.
Yeah. I think it was $24.99. It may have been on sale that day. But on the other side is the New York State flag. I carried the city flag. But I did get to carry the American flag, and it was a beautiful flag with gold that I described as tzitzis. It reminded me of the end of a talus. And a beautiful flag. But we were told by this, you know, angular old woman, remind me of Miss Grundy from Archie comics, who said, "Don't ever drop the flag." You know, it would be like a sin, like something like George Washington, a genie will pop out and go, "Hey, you drop me? After all I suffered at Valley Forge, you little Jew boy." And, you know, the kid dropped the flag once and he began to kiss those gold things. I wanted to do that on the Tonight Show. And they were a little bothered by the expression Jew boy. They were afraid they'd get too many letters from Alabama. So why don't you say Jew bastard? So it was nixed.
It was too Jewish, really.
These were very sad. Talk about too Jewish. These were considerations among the Jewish movie moguls and certainly early television, and as I pointed out, even contemporary television like the Seinfeld Show. But Jewish humor has almost been absorbed by has more than been absorbed by the culture at large. Even in the turn of the century, in the 20s and 30s, a lot of the top vaudevillians and stars were Jewish. And, I mean, if you listen to the Three Stooges, these are immigrant rhythms. And the Ritz Brothers, the Marx Brothers, you know, Cantor.
Right.
These were all Jews who made people laugh, and they may have changed their names. It was Tony Curtis was Tony Schwartz, but...
Or Jack Benny, or even any of these guys.
Oh, of course.
George Burns,
Benny Kubelski, right. You know, from Illinois, and George Burns, a lot of the writing of movies and all that, and even literature, a lot of like early Philip Roth, which is very funny. This is a kind of a tremendous Jewish influence in humor. There's no question about it. Sid Caesar. I mean, the list is endless.
Sure, and it isn't over yet.
No.
I want to thank Robert Klein for a great visit here on Too Jewish. He'll be our star for the 10th anniversary celebration of Too Jewish Radio Show at the Fox Theater on March 2nd here in Tucson at 7:45. You can go to the Fox Theater Tucson and order tickets. Thank you so much, Robert.
And for our Christian friends, I intend to do several Gregorian chants because I love them.
I especially I'll join you in those, actually.
Okay.
When we come back, we're about next week's guest. Get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community.
Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be the outstanding scholar and archaeologist, Professor Carol Myers of Duke, telling us about women in the time of the Bible. And don't forget to get your tickets now for the 10th anniversary celebration of Too Jewish at the Fox Theater this coming Saturday night, March 2nd, with comedian Robert Klein. Be a fantastic show. Go to foxtucsontheater.org or call 520-547-3040 for tickets. Our playout this morning comes for the holiday of Purim. It's the Sephardic tune Kichlot Yeni, Celebrate Purim Today with Wine and Song, from the group The Voice of the Turtle and their album The Sword of the Dove. My friends, have a Chag Purim Sameach, a happy holiday of Purim, and may you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a joyful week, we pray, of peace. Shavtu shirim kifisharim.